Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. Today, we are marking Martin Luther King Jr. Day by speaking with environmental justice activists who are on the front lines working to ensure that racial, economic, and environmental justice go hand in hand. Joining us are three activists. For the past 20 years, Catherine Coleman Flowers has dedicated her life to exposing what she calls America's dirty secret, people living among raw sewage. She first exposed this injustice where she grew up in Lowndes County, Alabama, which is between Selma and Montgomery. As she continued her work, she realized that this crisis is happening across the country, from the Navajo Nation to rural Kentucky. Catherine Coleman Flowers is an environmental activist, MacArthur Genius Grant recipient, and founding director of the Center for Rural Enterprise and Environmental Justice. In 2011, she worked with the UN Special Rapporteur to uncover the startling level of poverty in Lowndes County and the southern U.S. more broadly. Catherine Coleman Flowers is the author of Waste, One Woman's Fight Against America's Dirty Secret. Last March, she was appointed by the Biden administration to the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, which will help guide the executive branch's response to climate change and environmental injustice. Hi, Catherine. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Great to have you. Sharon Levine is a retired special needs teacher in St. James Parish, Louisiana, and the founder of Rise St. James, a faith-based grassroots organization that is fighting environmental justice as it works to defeat the proliferation of petrochemical industries in St. James Parish. Sharon Levine and her neighbors are fighting to stop a $9 billion petrochemical complex proposed by the Taiwanese conglomerate Formosa Plastics Group. Activists say the plant will drastically increase toxic levels of cancer-causing chemicals in the area. Sharon Levine grew up in Welcome, Louisiana, in St. James Parish along the Mississippi River. She says oil refineries and petrochemical plants have turned the area, a very vibrant place, into a nightmare of industrial pollution and disease. Last year, Sharon Levine was named North American winner of the Goldman Environmental Prize for fighting to keep chemical plants out of her already polluted community in what is called Cancer Alley. Hi, Sharon. Thanks for joining us again. It's great to have you back.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you. Frank Bebo is a tribal attorney for the White Earth Band of Ojibwe and Honor the Earth, an organization that uses indigenous wisdom, music, art, and the media to raise awareness and support for indigenous environmental issues. Frank Bebo is a member of the Pillager Band enrolled in the Minnesota Chippewa tribe on the White Earth Reservation. He's lived most of his life a half mile away from six Enbridge pipelines in northern Minnesota. Frank is currently fighting the Line 3 pipeline, which would bring a million barrels of tar sands per day from Alberta, Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. In August, Frank Bebo and opponents of Line 3 filed a lawsuit to halt construction on behalf of Wild Rice. The lawsuit is only the second Rights of Nature case to be filed in the United States. Hi, Frank. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you very much for inviting me on a great day.
Well, thank you all so much, and Happy New Year to all of you. I just want to ask all of you right now, what are your thoughts about where we are, given that we're going to talk about this tomorrow for voting rights, and Martin Luther King Jr.'s family is marching for voting rights? They're actually saying, please do not quote Martin Luther King Jr. unless you support voting rights for all. We just got word that Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin refused to support changing filibuster rules, given that, you know, two people, one Democrat, has so much power to stop progress. Catherine Coleman Flowers, let's start off with you. What are your thoughts about where we are right now?
Well, one of the things that my parents taught me, and they were activists, and we, you know, my father grew up along the Selma to Montgomery March Trail, so did my mother, and they were very involved in the voting rights movement. And one of the things that they told us that the struggle is never over. So I, you know, my 63 years looking back over, we always have to come back and fight the same thing over and over again, because it's built on these structures that are grounded in exploitation of labor and exploitation of the earth. So, and voting rights is definitely connected to that. because without voting rights, then they can do whatever they want to do without, you know, without any kind of without any kind of consequences. So the way I feel about it is that I'm not surprised to just tell us that we always have to stay woke.
What about you, Sharon? What are your thoughts? What would you add?
I would say my father was a civil rights leader, and he was always with voting. He always wanted us to have the right to vote. And I said, right now, we should still practice the right to vote, and we should still go out and vote, because if you vote, you have the power to change things. And so that need to be done. We need to continue with that. But Dr. King started, and it's an ongoing movement, because it's always something that we have to fight for. And until now, and not right now, it ties in with what I'm working towards, fighting for clean air, clean water, and clean soil. So it all ties in, and it come from way back, and it's still going on now.
Frank, what would you add?
Well, I think what Sharon just ended with and what I heard Catherine talking about are the same things that we're working on here in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Northern Michigan. And it's today's civil rights. It's the right to clean air. It's the right to clean water. It's a right to unpolluted world, you know, and those things seem out of reach. And interestingly enough, because I'm an old guy, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area in the late 60s and early 70s, and I saw what civil rights was all about. And I live on a reservation, and so as an Indian, I also watched what was happening in Indian country in the 70s from the Washington, D.C. area. So when people talk about civil rights, Indians have civil rights also, and those are based on treaties, and that's what we're using for our fight. And so I'm glad to see other people standing up. What they're standing up for is just as important, because we have to be taking on government everywhere, because we cannot rely on what we have in place now.
Frank, to that point, you all filed a lawsuit to halt construction of Line 3 in August on behalf of Wild Rice. In all of the time that you've spent doing this really important work and what you've seen, and you've seen a lot, what would you say is most effective? I mean, what really stands out for you? And to tie that to where we are right now, just to give people some, you know, hope about activism and mobilization and what really works.
Well, you know, I watched what happened with Dakota Access, and I saw what was happening with KXL, and, you know, I work with Winona LaDuke, and we had to look at preparing for what's happening here for the people that were coming in to stand up for clean water and to protect our wild rice, and you know, who are ultimately now being charged, you know, with different kinds of trespass and so forth. I think, you know, as a person who grew up outside of Washington, D.C., and you get exposed to what looks like, you know, well-thought-out deliberation for the people. And back then, it probably was. But now, you know, I'm living out here, and I don't see where federal law works. I don't see where state law works. They use words like, you know, Environmental Protection Agency, but they're not protecting. They're looking for the, you know, acceptable level of degradation. And we can't accept that anymore in Indian country. We have resources that we have to be able to guard and pass on to the generations after us. And the state of Minnesota is really who is attempting to regulate without our consent and allowing these resources to fall into, you know, bad ways. And I think in many ways, the law that we've created at the White Earth Reservation and that we've used and filed against the DNR is probably the first step in what's going to change the landscape environmentally. There's been a second case filed, and I don't know if you're aware of that right now, but it's over in Seattle, Washington, and basically it's a rights of salmon case. And the three dams that provide hydroelectricity to light all of Seattle block salmon from swimming upstream to the Sauk Seattle tribe, who have a treaty with the United States, and they're not getting their fish to swim up, even though the Supreme Court has ruled that the salmon are a treaty right and a primary treaty food, and they should have a way to get to where the Indians said that they would stay and live. So this is just the beginning. You're going to see a lot more rights of nature, because, and in tribal communities, in tribal court, Because when you file in state court, you go to see an agency and try to argue against them, you end up in a long, drawn-out process where deference is given to the agency for the things that they decide, and then you end up in a long legal appeal process. We did all this with Line 3. We were in there for 7 years. Wow. And all of my attorney friends thought I was crazy. You know, they didn't say it that way. And maybe they just, you know, as one of my attorney friends say, I'm not crazy, I'm just out there. This rights of monomen may be the only thing that makes any sense right now that's an actual law somewhere on the books. And it may be the key to the future, using our treaty rights in a way that protects everybody, because state law isn't protecting us and federal law isn't protecting us.
Well, you know, Frank, the same thing's happening in California. Dams are about to come down over the same issues you're talking about in Washington state. So we're definitely going to do a show about that. Sharon, what would you add? I mean, you all with Rise St. James have really done so much awareness raising around the $9 billion petrochemical complex by Formosa Plastics Group. And we've had you on the show many times saying that, you know, you have a Democratic governor there and it's hard to even get a meeting with him to talk about this. But you all have really done an amazing job of putting this on the map. So what would you say works? I mean, you're working against these, like Frank and so many activists, working against these billion-dollar multinationals.
Well, I know we're working against these billion-dollar industries, but together, people would get together and work on it together and try to find solution, form strategies, stand up and fight, talk to our parish officials who voted this industry in and voted for the other 12 that's in here. We have power with the people. We even formed a coalition, and we have so many different organizations throughout Cancer Alley that joined with us to help us with this fight. So you really need the people to help get this moving. And I know a lot of people don't want to speak up because of their jobs and because they are fearful. But it takes someone to stand up, and that someone just had to be me. So we asked to speak to the governor. We went to the governor's mansion on our march. He wouldn't come out to speak with us. We tried to get meetings with him. And one time he told us that he need more data. My attorney said, how much more data do you need? Mm. He gave him everything, all of the dirty works on Formosa. They did so much dirt in Texas, in Comfort, Fort Comfort. And we don't know what else he needs to let him revoke this permit with Formosa. So if the people is the one that's standing up to fight this fight. It's not the politicians, it's not the ministers, just regular people that lives in the community. And that's what we have. We have people power.
What would you add, Catherine? I mean, you've done also, you and your team have done an incredible job of raising awareness about raw sewage in your area. You've taken politicians like Senator Bernie Sanders, filmmakers, journalists, celebrities on tours, their sewage plant tours in Lowndes County. And your really important work was featured on 60 Minutes in December, last month, actually. So what would you say actually works during this time?
Well, first of all, I have to say that this is a 20-year work in progress. It took all of that to get to this place at this particular time. And this is not a new problem. But I agree with Sharon. I agree with Frank. A lot of it is people power. Some of it is going to be legal power that will be involved. Some of it would be, actually, we're fighting on various levels. And I think that we have to look at different strategies and be supportive. I think one of the things that was very, one of the things that has been inspiring me was, first of all, going to St. James Parish and meeting Sharon and the people that are working there in St. James and St. John's Parish dealing with the line through that, but I got the opportunity. I had the opportunity to go to Standing Rock. And out of all of those movements, I have drawn inspiration and encouragement. And like Sharon said, that we have to be supportive of each other. And I think that getting those, getting that type of encouragement and inspiration as well as fighting on multiple levels to bring about the type of justice that should exist for all of these communities is very important. And I think it's also very important to know that on Dr. King's birthday, that all of this is also tied with voting rights. Right. And we have to keep that in mind.
Right. It is. It's so connected. Catherine, you were appointed by the Biden administration last March to the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. Can you tell us about your role and tell us about this council?
Well, first of all, I have to preface my remarks by saying I cannot speak on behalf of the WEJAC, but it consists of 26 people from throughout the United States that represent various organizations in different regions. A lot of the people are well-known actors like Dr. Beverly Wright, Dr. Bob Bullard, Kyle White. There are so many people from throughout the U.S. that have been involved for a very long time that are part of this. We have one of the youngest members is Jerome Foster, who is a young climate activist. So our goal is to provide guidance to the administration through DEQ for about environmental justice. And one of the most important things I think that everybody should pay attention to that's coming out of this effort is Justice 40. And Justice 40 means that 40% of the benefits from these programs, these federal programs, should go to these communities that have been overburdened and under-resourced. And I think seeing how that money, where that money goes, whether or not it gets to the people that or the communities that need it and how that money is spent, I think is going to be very important. And our role is to provide guidance. And I serve as one of the, there are two chairs and two vice chairs, and I'm one of the vice chairs of the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council.
You know, Sharon, Catherine, with all of the media attention that Build Back Better got, environmental justice did not get that much attention. And that Build Back Better Act includes $162 billion to advance environmental justice priorities supported by the Equitable and Just National Platform co-authors. I mean, a number of organizations are behind these provisions in Build Back Better. I mean, there's just so much. It's supporting climate justice block grants, programs to clean up pollution, create toxic-free communities, climate-resilient affordable housing. I mean, so much. Now that we don't know for certain what's going to happen with Build Back Better, what's the path ahead for these important provisions?
Well, I think what's very important is that we have to keep talking about it, and we need to keep highlighting these communities that are in need, like Lowndes County in Alabama, where people are still living with raw sewage on the ground. So that's why these programs are so important. And I think that this is also where voting is important, that we have to also, we want to see these things happen in our communities. We want to see these programs pass and become a part of the law and are funded. We have to vote for people that represent our interests. And that means that everybody that's not registered to vote should get registered to vote. And we should find ways to jump over all these obstacles that they're putting in our way to keep us from going to the polls to vote, because that's the only way we're going to make it happen. We see this, and I think early on you mentioned how two people can hold up progress. Well, that means that we either need to replace those two people or get more people to be part of the process so that we can have more progress.
Sharon, what would you add about these really important provisions in Build Back Better, and what's next for them? You know, without someone like Manchin signing on, the whole thing could be dead.
Just like Catherine said, we need to elect people that's going to speak for us and work for us, because just like two people can hold it up, we can get more people involved and elect more people. That's why voting is very important. Get these people out of office who is not working in our favor. And that's what we're trying to do in St. James now, because they are voting. We're voting for people that's not really in our best interest. So that's what we need to do. Get those out of office that's not with us and put people in there that will support us.
Frank, what would you add? There was a lot of coverage in Indian country about how Build Back Better would affect tribes. Several members of tribes had a seat at the table to determine how a lot of this money would be spent.
Well, you know, I'm listening to all of this, and it's sad. You know, I looked up to see where the parish is down there in Louisiana. I spent some time down there in Louisiana, and you know, that's another beautiful fishery down there, just like in northern Minnesota. And big oil has really disrupted everything. And so I want to just kind of tell you the story, the way I kind of see things right now for politics and why we're not getting help and why it's going to be hard to get help. And right, it is going to take people power. There's no way around it. So, you know, we tried to fight Line 3. We tried to get an environmental impact statement from the EPA or the Corps of Engineers, but it was under Trump when he was still president. And it happened in November after the state of Minnesota basically sold us out and gave all the permits they could to Enbridge. And then, you know, Enbridge, you know, got the permits right away from the Corps of Engineers. And we sued them back in December of 2020 in an expedited fashion. And here we are in January of 2022, still waiting on that decision. And the line has been built. So I say that about the court system first. Now, our governor and our attorney general were both U.S. House representatives previously. And I've been to both of their offices in the past when they were at the Capitol with Indian tribal business, with Indian tribes. So they understand what our rights are when they're at the U.S. Capitol. Now that they're the governor and the attorney general, they represent the state of Minnesota, and they're in competition for our resources. And so right now, the way I look at the world, and you know, you can ask other people what they think about this, but we have this problem where we didn't get an EIS. Now, the reason we didn't get an EIS from everything I can see is because along the route where we're most concerned about our fresh water, and we live at the top of three of the four the watersheds for North America, start here about a half hour from my house in Minnesota. So we are as upstream as you can get. There is a place, there's several mines up here for exotic metals, copper, nickel in particular, for the Green New Revolution, which is part of the Build Back Better deal. The problem is they want to extract those metals in places where all of the fresh water starts, all of our fisheries and all of our game and everything else lives, where we expect to hunt, fish, and gather for a long time. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I saw in the news where GM and Tesla were openly saying, anybody who's got a mine out there that's got some of these metals, let us know because we'd like to help you. All of a sudden, now, Tesla is hooked up to the Talon mine for Rio Tinto, about 45 minutes south of me, where they want to go in and they want to start extracting these exotic metals out along the same exact watersheds that we were fighting for Line 3. So why isn't the Corps of Engineers helping us? Because there's another new green supposed deal coming along for Build Back Better America for everybody else to have cell phones and to have, you know, Teslas or electric vehicles or whatever you got to have. But they don't know that it's at the risk of their own drinking water, like Flint, Michigan, all the way up north in Minnesota. Right.
Frank, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because that is really important. And here we are talking about money for electric charging stations and the electric vehicle craze, but we really have to talk about what that means. I mean, have you all been in talks with the Interior Department about any of this?
We've been in talks with everybody over the 7 or 8 years that we've been fighting this. You know, a lot of it in the last part was against the Trump administration, so there really wasn't much that we could work with. We thought that, you know, things would change when the Biden administration came in, but it was crickets. We haven't heard a thing, and we're still in the fight ourselves. And so after we've exhausted all of our administrative remedies, all of our appeals and everything else, and all the other attorneys have had their shot, Frank and the rights monomen at the White Earth Reservation using a tribal law and tribal court have now stepped out and gotten more attention, I think, on the problem that's going on and may have found the new way to prevent things that require our consent, not just take advantage of our rights.
Well, we're definitely going to do a show about what you just brought up around the electric vehicle craze. That's just such an important one. I mean, it's happening in the Congo, but then, as you say, it's also happening here. And so is this new? I mean, is that what you just announced, talked about with Tesla, is that new or has that been happening?
I think it's new to me, or I would have heard something beforehand. It's ironic that I saw it on the news on TV about 2 weeks ago, and now I just saw it on the local TV channel or on a news blurb or something, because there was an announcement from Rio Tinto, the mine down there at the Talon Mine, about the new deal with Tesla, because it's a competition for all of those resources. And so if you want to be Build Back, you know, Better America, and you want to have, you know, national security and have enough resources within your own boundaries, you know, to make your own goods to sell to people and not have to rely on the rest of the world, well, then you gotta shit in your own nest.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a quick break. That is Frank Bibow, tribal attorney for the White Earth Band of Ojibwe and Honor the Earth. Frank Bibow is a member of the Pillager Band enrolled in the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe on the White Earth Reservation in Minnesota. Frank is currently fighting the Line 3 pipeline. In August, he and opponents filed a lawsuit to halt construction on behalf of Wild Rice. We're also joined by Sharon Levine, founder of Rise St. James, a faith-based grassroots organization that's fighting for environmental justice as it works to defeat the proliferation of petrochemical industries in St. James Parish in Louisiana. Sharon Levine and her neighbors are fighting to stop a $9 billion petrochemical complex proposed by the Taiwanese conglomerate Formosa Plastics Group. Catherine Coleman Flowers has dedicated her life to exposing what she calls America's dirty secret, people living among raw sewage. Catherine Coleman Flowers is author of Waste, One Woman's Fight Against America's Dirty Secret. On today's Your Call, we are celebrating Martin Luther King Jr. Day by speaking with environmental justice activists who have been on the front lines for many years. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will discuss the future of voting rights now that Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema refuse to support changing filibuster rules. What is next? And then on Wednesday and Thursday, we're doing a two-part series on the homeless crisis in California and across the country. What is being done? How are politicians responding? And what actually works? Today, we are marking Martin Luther King Jr. Day by speaking with environmental justice activists who are working to ensure that racial, economic, and environmental justice go hand in hand. Catherine Coleman Flowers has dedicated her life to exposing what she calls this country's dirty secret, people living among raw sewage. Catherine Coleman Flowers was appointed by the Biden administration to the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, and she's the author of Waste, One Woman's Fight Against America's Dirty Secret. Sharon Levine is founder of Rise St. James. She and her neighbors are fighting to stop a $9 billion petrochemical complex proposed by the Taiwanese conglomerate Formosa Plastics Group in Louisiana. Frank Bibow is a tribal attorney for the White Earth Band of Ojibwe and Honor the Earth, currently fighting the Line 3 pipeline, which would bring 1 million barrels of tar sands per day from Alberta, Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on environmental justice today and where it's going? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We heard a little bit from Frank and Sharon about what's going on where they're living and, you know, what they're fighting against. Catherine, can you just remind us about the situation where you are in Lowndes County, Alabama, which is between Selma and Montgomery? I mean, you mentioned that you've been doing this work for 20 years. You've been on 60 Minutes. You've had billionaires come and go on your tours. You've had the UN Special Rapporteur uncover startling levels of poverty in your area. So what has really changed over the years?
I think the fact that we're talking about it without shame. There was a time that a lot of people are still saying they don't know that this exists. And this is not just a Lowndes County problem. This is a problem right there in the Central Valley in California. You know, it's a problem throughout the United States where people are living with inadequate sanitation. I've talked to my friends in Alaska where people are still using honeypots. So this is a problem that in a nation, and I think what it does is that it shows the contrast in terms of the structural inequities that exist in the wealthiest country in the world, where we feel that we have solved this problem here, or we look the other way while thinking or feeling benevolent about helping other areas. I don't have a problem with helping other areas, but we need to not be blind to what is occurring right here in the U.S., especially when we know that we can now test wastewater and see how many people in the community have been infected with COVID. That's just one of many diseases that people could potentially be exposed to. And we were able to find out about hookworm. What has changed? Now we at least got people on the highest level of government paying attention to this and are trying to find ways in which to make sure, one, that whatever funding is available, and there is funding that is coming, whatever funding is available to actually make it to the communities. Because one of the problems that we have, even with the American Rescue Plan, that there were millions of dollars that went to the state of Alabama that are going to be reallocated to build prisons. And we have to make sure that not only are sanitation systems built for families that need them, but that they are working systems, that these are not systems that people would come in and sell in these communities, like Ms. Charlie May, who is featured on 60 Minutes, who's been complaining for as long as I've been out here doing this work about sewage coming back into her home, and she pays a sewage fee every month. Mm-hmm. Or people that are living where they put in place sewage lagoons, and these sewage lagoons are not within the best interest of our community. So I think now the solution is that we're talking about it. We're also talking about ways in which we could address this. I actually just moved from the Lowndes County area to northern Alabama because NASA is located here, the Marshall Space Flight Center, and they actually have learned how to treat wastewater to drinking water quality. And our goal is to work with them and see what we can do to create a new way of treating wastewater that will take us from putting the waste into these pipes that generally ends up in our rivers and streams. So that is one of the ways in which we are not waiting on other people, but dealing with it ourselves. And lastly, any money that is spent from the federal government that should go to put in place these wastewater treatment plants or these on-site systems should come at least with a warranty, as long as a housing mortgage. That would force people to have quality systems. Because right now, when these systems are put in place, the onus is transferred immediately to the homeowner. But if you get a hot water heater and it fails within a certain amount of time, the manufacturer is responsible for it. We need to do the same thing with sanitation.
And for people who are not familiar with this, I hope you'll take some time and you can watch the 60 Minutes segment or any video. If you type in Catherine Coleman Flowers, you'll see exactly what she's talking about. You write about this in your book also, Catherine. So many people you write about talk about how sewage flows into a hole in the ground, for example, behind a back door, and they see feces, they see toilet paper, and this horrible sewage near the top of the hole. I mean, this is what people are dealing with today.
And sometimes it doesn't go into the hole. Well, generally it comes out of a PVC pipe. This is generally, and a lot of people cannot afford adequate housing, so they end up in mobile homes. And you know, we're in Tornado Alley in this region. But they're in these mobile homes, and when they flush the toilet, it'll go through a PVC pipe and end up on top of the ground. And when it ends up on top of the ground, yes, you can see everything. Whatever came out of the toilet will end up, you know, that's where it is. And then some people do have holes that it go into, or they've made some kind of rudimentary way of dealing with it where they will not see it, or at least take it away from the house. For those that have paid for systems and these systems fail, when they fail, the sewage comes back into the house, and they usually come in through it can come in through a shower, it can come in through a tub. We've even heard, since the 60 Minutes piece aired, one family in Alabama who is a white family sent me pictures of sewage in their bathtub. They said they've had this problem since 2019, and they showed where the town would send a truck to pump it out of their yard, but pump it into the nearby ditch. These are the kinds of things that we need to remedy. that's happening around the country. And I think the part of the solution is exposing it, because until we acknowledge that we have a problem wholeheartedly and not just in Lowndes County, we're going to continue to have these problems in other areas.
Right. And as you say, this is happening all over the place, from the Navajo Nation. You talked about Alaska. What is it like when a segment like 60 Minutes airs? I'm sure that you hear from people in other parts of the country who are dealing with similar things, right?
Yes, I've heard from people that are dealing with similar things, but I've heard from people who've never been there who think they have the answer. And I think part of this sometimes is the privilege of folk who will come in and test something, and when it fails, they're gone. And the reason that I've stayed committed to this problem, I think that's why I'm hearing from my, you know, from everyone else that's on the program with me today, is that we're committed to these communities. We're not going anywhere. So consequently, we have to make sure that whatever the remedy is, it has to work. It can't be something that's short term or for people to come in and siphon off whatever dollars might be there for this problem and then move on.
Right. And you touched on this earlier, but can you tell us a little bit more? I mean, the New York Times even had a piece just a couple of days ago: an Alabama town sewage woes test Biden's infrastructure ambitions. The new law allocates over $11 billion for wastewater, but will it get to the communities who need it most?
Yes, and that's still the question. I mean, if they can take money from the American Rescue Plan and build prisons instead of help families that have been impacted by COVID, then certainly we are concerned that when that money comes to the state, that is not redirected for other reasons or redirected into projects where systems are failing and put in these same communities that have been suffering all along, instead of putting in place systems that will work. Mm-hmm. And that is a question that I have, but I think that as activists and advocates, it is our role and responsibility is to make sure that we keep shining light on these things so that it will happen the way it should happen and that people will get justice.
Mm. Sharon or Frank, do you have any questions or comments for what Catherine was just talking about there?
You know, it's what we're talking about is crimes of poverty. Mm. And what she was talking about is the only solution, and that's being committed to the community. But, you know, getting those people who live in Washington, D.C., or who live in St. Paul or wherever, to also be committed to your community, that is really a hardship. And, you know, unfortunately, in this world, they've got a bazillion things that they're making promises to, and you can never tell which ones to rely on. And I've accepted the reality that I've already shared with you about what I think is going on with the precious metals. And as a result, I pulled together, and we're going to have to do it some more, but I was able to pull together over $50,000 to do a thermal imaging flyover of all of Line 3 that was just constructed in Minnesota. I did it with places like, you know, Sierra Club, MN350, Rise, Honor the Earth, and the White Earth Band of Ojibwe. And we're using that to target the areas where the frack outs and the aquifer breaches are. That's something that the DNR should be doing. That's something that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency should be doing. But we can't get them to do that job. They're into regulatory activity and they're into permitting activity. But I'll tell you, when it comes to remediation and cleanup, I think it goes to a voicemail or something. It's hard to find somebody who's actually working on that stuff, much less looking to see where it is. Because once they know, once they document it, then they're responsible. So they don't even want to find any more problems, is how it seems to us. Hmm. It's crazy. How do you make government do its job?
Right. Sharon, do you have anything to add?
Well, I mimic off of Catherine and Frank. We have so many issues over here, especially in St. James Parish. And we have to find solutions if we want to live, because we're already bombarded with 12 industries in the 5th district within a 10-mile radius. And we have 7 in the 4th district. These are predominantly Black districts. And whenever the parish council want to vote on putting industry in any districts in St. James, they choose the 4th or the 5th district. But the 5th district and the 4th district, we can't take anymore. And if the chemicals that's being emitted already in the air is cancer causing, we have people that's dying And when COVID came, the death rate increased. We were having like a funeral a week, sometimes two, sometimes three. And majority of the people are dying with cancer. And then COVID on top of it didn't help. So we're really fighting for our lives over here in St. James, especially in the 5th District. And the industry come in here and it, I guess they must look at a map or something and think that they don't have people that live here. Then when they come to see, they see that we that people are living here. And the parish officials, they throw out the red carpet for them. They let them come here. They're tax exempt. We are being taxed. The families, especially the poor families, some people are tax exempt. I don't know who they know or how they come to get tax exempt. But we are fighting for our lives over here. The air is so toxic until you can't go outside at a certain time of day and breathe clean air. It's just that bad. And just like Catherine said, she came to St. James and she visited with us and she saw where we are living. And all we want to do is live. We want to breathe clean air and drink clean water and go back to planting a garden again. We can't plant a garden because the soil is so polluted with industry. And we just had a ammonia leak Saturday morning. They were so bad, we couldn't stay out there. That's what we're dealing with on a daily basis. And if I can talk to President Biden, I would tell him myself, come out here and sit in this area for 2 hours. And you'll tell me how you feel after you get ready to leave.
Sharon, you say that these petrochemical plants and the refineries have turned St. James Parish, a vibrant place, into a nightmare of industrial pollution and disease. I was just looking on the map. You're only an hour's drive from New Orleans, which is, you know, if tourists go to Louisiana, they tend to go to New Orleans. They might not know what's going on in St. James. So can you just describe what it's like on a regular basis to be surrounded by all of these petrochemical plants and these refineries?
On a daily basis, if you come to St. James and St. John the Baptist Parish, we have two parishes that's really bad over here. And you just ride on the river road, you will get a whiff of what's going on. If you come across the Sunshine Bridge, you can smell the chemicals in the air. It's just that bad.
The EPA Administrator Michael Reagan visited your area. Can you tell us, has anything come of that visit? Do you think anything will come of that?
Oh, when Michael Reagan came to visit us, we thought that was so wonderful because he saw firsthand what was going on. And Region 6 haven't really helped with the problem. We call them whenever we have a smell. I know I do. And they take the information, and 2 or 3 days later, they'll send someone out, sometime a week or two later, and they say they don't smell anything. I guess not if you're going to wait 2 or 3 weeks later. So Michael Reagan said he's going to he's going to do something about it, and he was glad. He met with us. We walked around and showed him. And he saw firsthand how the oil tanks, storage tanks, are right next to homes. The emissions that come out of those storage tanks, you cannot breathe the air. I'm telling you, if you would come out here and see what I'm talking about, you wonder how the people are living here. And there's a little area in Birdland. These people are bombarded with two industries. One is called Marathon. The other one is called New Star. These people are dying. They're sick. And that's what we bought Michael Reagan. He saw for himself. And we're going to do a follow-up visit as soon as we can plan it with him.
Will you be in touch with the EPA regularly, Sharon? Or, I mean, were any promises made? Or
He didn't make any promises, but he's going to work with us to see what he can do.
Well, you know, we'll try to invite him on and see what they plan to do. And we'd love to just continue following this because we just hope it's not, you know, empty promises or empty words. That is Sharon Levine. founder of Rice St. James. They are fighting to stop a $9 billion petrochemical complex proposed by Formosa Plastics Group. We're also joined today by Catherine Coleman Flowers, author of Waste, One Woman's Fight Against America's Dirty Secret. That is people living among raw sewage. Frank Bebo is tribal attorney for the White Earth Band of Ojibwe and Honor the Earth. We're almost out of time, but Frank, can you tell us what it is like to live so close to these Enbridge pipelines in Minnesota?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, you know, information and the information highway, the internet and all that stuff. When Kalamazoo happened, and of course in 2010, that's also when Event Horizon happened out there with the oil rig out in the Gulf of Mexico. At that time, they thought that was the largest inland oil spill in North America at Kalamazoo. And in actuality, the largest inland oil spill happened in Grand Rapids, Minnesota in 1991. And people don't know that because the internet really wasn't available and that information wasn't really on the internet at that time. Because ironically, when that pipeline broke, it was like March 3rd and everything was snow and ice. And so the oil that came out of the ground was on top of frozen ground and frozen ice on the Prairie River. And they were able to squeegee it up, put it back into other tankers, take it back upstream to Clearbrook and put it into another pipeline. So that was 1991. In 2002, they had another pipeline rupture about 10 miles away from my house in between Grand Rapids and Ball Club. And that resulted not only in a release that was monumental, but they also set it on fire because they thought it was going to get to the Mississippi River. So then in 2007 at Clearbrook, where they took that oil back in 1991, that's where the junction is in the facility center, they had an explosion there. And they lost a couple of lives with those people as well. So then you had the 2010 Kalamazoo oil spill, which is actually part of the same Line 3 complex for Enbridge. And then all of a sudden, in I think it was 2019, Husky Refinery at Superior, Wisconsin, right on the shores of Lake Superior, and it was on the national news and everything, they had a giant fire at that refinery. Now, that wasn't Enbridge, but it was Enbridge who brought that oil there. So when I live a half a mile away from this pipeline, I live a half a mile away from something that could happen anywhere from my house, anywhere along 300 miles in northern Minnesota, that could cause an explosion, it could cause a fire, it could cause a lot of problems, and it could really damage the water for everybody. So it's just a reality like they're talking about, except their reality is a lot easier to see. We're waiting for a ticking time bomb. You can see and smell sewage. You can see and smell those chemicals. You know, that's a terrible way. That's a terrible way to have to live. And if you think about it, they're in a community that's much warmer than ours. And so those things, they just naturally continue to bubble and release. Here, at least you get a free frozen, you know, time during the year, whatever. I would hope that that wouldn't occur the same way. But it's, you know, sewage has got to be the worst for our world. And I don't care if it's chemical, bio, or people or whatever. If we're not going to clean up after ourselves, we're doing it to ourselves in our own nest.
Right. Yes. I wish we had another hour, but we have just a few minutes. We're getting a lot of emails from people saying, thank you for your work. How do you keep going? And what's next? About a minute each. Frank?
Well, you know, I work with Winona LaDuke. It's a women-led organization. It's an indigenous organization. And, you know, I've tried to lead different efforts. I find it's a lot easier to support someone as dynamic as Winona and other women doing the work. So when I look at Catherine and Sharon, I can see how they're already plugged in. And so, you know, you've got to get the right people working on these things and networking. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, in a sexist way, it's a lot of male thinking that puts these, you know, these plants chasing money, you know, putting people to work, whatever you want to call it, you know, putting our world in jeopardy and making it polluted. And it's women who are worried about the children and the grandchildren and how the world's going to be for everybody.
Hmm. What would you add, Sharon? What keeps you going and what's next?
What keeps me going is faith. Faith in God, that God put this fight in me to protect the community, the people, and he don't want us to not be able to breathe clean air or drink clean water. And whenever I have doubt, I go to the good Lord. And that's my rock. And that's who keep me going and my community, knowing that they want me to continue this fight. And that's what I'm going to do. And I wanted to read something from Martin Luther King. He said, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. That's what happened with me. I didn't see the whole staircase. I just went out there on faith. And we've been working for 3 years, and we have accomplished a whole lot within 3 years.
Thank you for that. What about you, Catherine?
Yes, I think that one of the things that keeps me going, of course, is my faith, because my father always told me that if you make one step, he'll make two. And the only way we're going to get something done is that we got to get out there and do the work. It's also the faith that my community has in me, because I'm from Lowndes County and I can trace my history not only, you know, to the enslaved people that went there, but I can also trace my history to the Battle of Holy Ground when they fought in the Creek Wars. So I'm very committed to that. And one of the things that in terms of the future, I think that we're going to find solutions. And I'm also inspired by the fact that I have a 6-year-old grandson and I don't want him to have to fight this battle. And one of the things that I took away from Standing Rock is that we have to be concerned about 7 generations to come.
Catherine Coleman Flowers is the author of Waste, One Woman's Fight Against America's Dirty Secret, and that is People Living Among Raw Sewage. Sharon Levine is founder of Rise St. James, an organization fighting for environmental justice in St. James Parish, Louisiana. They're fighting to stop a $9 billion petrochemical proposed by the Formosa Plastics Group, a petrochemical complex. Frank Bibow is a tribal attorney for the White Earth Band of Ojibwe and Honor the Earth, and they are fighting against Line 3 and Enbridge Line 3, which would bring 1 million barrels of tar sands per day from Alberta, Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. Frank, Sharon, and Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can find out more about their work at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.